Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
We should start by asking you for a good working definition of the word simplify.
Oh, that's easy. Because the dictionary is the first place I go when I need a simple explanation of what something means.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the first things I did when I started writing this book, because I wasn't sure I understood what it meant to simplify myself. And so I went to good old Webster, and basically what he says is it means to reduce to basic essentials, or to diminish in scope or complexity, and to make more intelligible, which, you know, let's face it, we all need things to be a little bit more intelligible these days.
Yes. What were you seeing in the world around you that made you feel there was a need for a book on simplicity?
Well, just my own life was confirmation of the fact that things needed to be calmed down, simplified, and streamlined. But what really triggered it was when I went with my kids to see the Pixar movie WALL-E.
Mm.
And I, you know, got a look at the piles of stuff that the little robot was stacking up, trying to make room on the planet. And I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, if we all don't get a grip, that really is what it's going to look like. Because we seem to fill our lives with things that we wind up throwing away, you know, both mentally, spiritually, and physically, that we really need to understand how important it is to make wise choices along the way.
Now, anyone can organize their house or cut back their commitments, or maybe we need some help there actually as well. But there has to be a purpose for all of this. Once we clear the clutter, what should we be aiming to focus on?
Well, actually, I take kind of the reverse approach to it. Rather than digging in and trying to clear all the clutter, I try to step back and kind of walk around my commitments and look at it with more of an objective angle, and step back like an outsider and look at my activities, the organization of my household, the things I'm committed to doing on a regular basis. And I just step back and look at it and go, okay, now what's really important here? What's really going to matter 5 years, 10 years down the road? And am I going to be sorry I spent so much time taking care of this when I should have been focused on this person instead? And so what I do when I'm trying to simplify any area of my life is really step back and evaluate, you know, what's going on in my life and what it is that's consuming my time and keeping me from spending time with my family, with my friends, doing things that I really, truly enjoy doing, and the things that kind of refresh me and get me ready to face another day.
There's quite a story about the Christmas when you and your family were virtually forced into simplifying your life.
Well, we were, at the time, we were house parents at a children's home, and our staff house flooded. And so, I mean, it was Christmas Eve, and we had been gone, having Christmas with friends, and we came home, and all this water was pouring out from under our door, and we went, uh-oh, and opened the door, and it all came flooding out on us. And so we had to move out while our house was put back together, and that meant we had to move into one of the vacant staff houses because all the boys had gone home for Christmas holidays, and we could only take the few things that we absolutely needed, and because just about everything else was ruined. And so we just, you know, got our toothbrushes and our, you know, a few changes of clothes that hadn't gotten soaked, and moved in across the street and just, you know, made do with what we had. And it forced us at the time to spend time doing other things, things that we normally wouldn't be doing because we'd be busy taking care of the house, you know.
Mm.
Well, we weren't taking care of the house because the house was a disaster area. And it gave us time to spend together as a couple. At the time, we just had one child. It gave us time to spend with our little boy, who was always a bundle of energy and full of questions. It gave us time really to reflect on a lot of things and evaluate what was really important.
Well, let's talk about some ways we can simplify our lives. Firstly, decluttering. It's become pretty fashionable lately. There's even celebrity decluttering experts now. But possessions aren't innately bad, are they? How can we identify when we have too much stuff?
Well, there are many schools of thought on this. And, you know, you can go to the extreme and say, okay, I'm going to get rid of everything that's not really useful. Well, you're going to get rid of a lot of things that actually bring you pleasure when you take that route. Just for example, you know, I'm sitting in my bedroom as we have this conversation, and while my personal decorating style is a little leaner than my husband's, he enjoys more stuff. We both appreciate good art. And we are, unfortunately, we are addicted to books, so we've got books everywhere. That's probably not unfortunate. It's just that you have to have a place to put it. But all of these things, many of these things actually have sentimental value to us. They bring us pleasure on some level. Now, what I do personally when I'm trying to declutter is go into a room and first of all look around and say, okay, what in here do I really like, really, really enjoy, and what would I miss? And that's, you know, that's kind of the first step in decluttering. And you can usually identify just a few items or a few pictures or whatever, and then you go from there and you go, okay, now would it simplify my life if I didn't have this other group of things? And most of the time, the answer is yes, especially if you clean your own house, then you don't want to have to dust every little knickknack that you've collected over the years. And those are the kinds of things that you can free up a lot of time for yourself if you have the nerve to box them up and either store them out of sight or get rid of them.
Sometimes, though, you've got to make those hard decisions with things like the nostalgia or whatever. Do you have some practical tips to how to make those hard decisions, though, if you just simply have to get rid of stuff?
Oh, sure. I raised six children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with every child, there were a few things that I kept to save for the next child. Well, as it turned out, I had a house full of boys and one girl. So, you know, it became apparent that I was not going to need all those little cute little girl clothes. So I did finally part with them. And honestly, it was a little painful because I could remember when my daughter wore all those things. And if perhaps I had had a big house with lots of closets and space was not a concern, I might have kept them. And then I could have passed them on to a granddaughter. But we don't have the guarantee that we're going to have a granddaughter. And when space is at a premium, which it was for us, it becomes necessary to just say, okay, they're just things. They're just clothes. And I can always get more later if I really need them. And it's the same way with, I mentioned in the book the concept of, people that save birthday cards. My husband used to be really bad about this. He would save all of his birthday cards and Father's Day cards, and he had stacks and stacks of them, and he had them all in one box. And finally, the last time we moved, I pulled that box out and brought it to his attention, and I said, do we really have to move this one more time? And he looked at it, and he said, what is it? He didn't even know what it was.
Oh, wow.
Because he hadn't looked at it in probably 15 years. And the tape was turning yellow, and he realized, oh, that was silly, wasn't it, to hang on to that kind of stuff. And so he said, just throw it away and don't let me even see what's in it.
Mm.
And so I did. And these are all things that we have to evaluate. There are some valuable sentimental pieces that, we should hang on to. for example, my plaster of Paris handprints of my children. I'm not going to get rid of those.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of other things I had to let go, simply because they took up space that we needed for actual living. And that's really when you have to make some hard decisions, is when you realize my clutter is getting in the way of my family having space to spread out and really enjoy our home.
Let's move to money then. How can that cause our lives to become overcomplicated, and how can we free ourselves from it?
Well, I think the biggest issue with money is our relationship to it. If money is kept in proper perspective and we understand that the whole purpose of money is to provide for us and our families, and that there are some trust issues attached to money, then we can come to a place in our lives where we go, okay, it's not the money itself that's important. It's what the money provides for my family. And in my case, there is a real element of faith and trust at work where money is concerned, because especially in tough economic times, you know, you're inclined to want to hang on and you fret and worry about where the next dollar is coming from, whereas for Christians, we really do need to be able to say that I can trust in the Lord and He will provide for my every need. He'll provide my daily bread. And beyond that, I don't really need to be concerned. And so for most of us, money and possessions, it comes down to a matter of, am I hanging on to things? Am I fretting over money because I don't trust God? Or is it because I want to be responsible, or, you know, whatever the reason is. But money in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with money. I think we'd all agree with that. It serves a definite purpose.
Mm.
But the issue is that we can't allow fear to direct us when it comes to money or possessions. And we have to be confident that God's faithful and He's going to provide just as He promises.
Technology is a next logical step. It allows us to multitask more and more these days. Now, you haven't ditched technology altogether, but you do try to avoid too much multitasking. Why?
I learned a valuable lesson when my children were young, and I'm relearning it now with my grandchildren, is kids don't like when we choose the technology over face-to-face time with them. And an interesting thing, when I was raising my children, one thing I noticed, and I share this in the book, was that when I was driving my kids back and forth to baseball or church or wherever we were going, I didn't turn the radio on. And, of course, at the time we didn't have cell phones. And I discovered that we had some of our best and most open and honest conversations while we were driving around in the car, because they were talking to the back of my head and they couldn't see my face. And I, for some reason, kids feel really safe talking to the back of their parents' heads. They can say things in that situation that they might not say face-to-face. And so that right there, I continue that practice. When my kids, who are now grown, or my grandkids, who are growing up, are now in the car with me, I don't have the radio on. I don't, you know, use a Bluetooth. I don't use a cell phone when I drive. I talk to my kids or my grandkids. And we have some great, open, honest conversations in those situations. Now, one thing I've discovered with my 2-year-old granddaughter, she stays with me quite a bit, she doesn't like it when I'm on my iPhone. And she made it quite clear what she thought about the iPhone when she dropped it in the pool because she didn't want me on it. I saved it quickly enough that it wasn't completely ruined. But she's made it very clear. She doesn't want to have to compete with the technology. She wants FaceTime with her grandma. And I think most people are like that. They want FaceTime with the people they love. And a lot of times when we are multitasking, what that is another word for being rude.
For those who've been toying with the idea of reducing the amount of time they use technology and electronic media, perhaps even if it's just a day a week even, what would you say are the benefits of doing this?
Well, I think the biggest benefit is it opens your eyes to see exactly how much time those types of entertainment avenues take up. Whether it's, you know, I can testify to the fact that it's very easy to jump on the internet just to check your email, and 2 hours later, you're going, uh-oh, I've been surfing the net for 2 hours, and all I meant to do was check my email. It's, you know, it's a very seductive. So we have to, you know, be aware of, you know, the snares. At the same time that we embrace the convenience and the, you know, the benefits of it, because I love to jump online and do my research. I don't have to go to the library. You know, there are a lot of things I can do from home now that I wasn't able to do 10 years ago. And so I very much appreciate all of this stuff that we have at our fingertips nowadays. But even so, I have found it beneficial to set aside a day a week, sometimes more, to just fast from some aspect of electronic media, whether it's television, you know, watching it just, you know, sometimes we mindlessly turn on the TV and we've wasted an hour, you know, watching nothing. Or the same thing with the internet, streaming video, you know, and what I find alarming and amusing at the same time is young children, you know, watching streaming video when they could be outside playing, and that, you know, that concerns me. And so I've watched these things, I watch these trends, and I know that it's a different world from what I lived in as a child. But at the same time, as parents, we need to be conscious of what kind of values we're instilling in our children when it comes to technology.
A big one, especially for Christians who are really committed to a lot of activities, is this issue of being overcommitted and time poor. How can we identify if we're overcommitting ourselves?
Absolutely. I mean, we all have responsibilities. You can't just skip out on your job and say, okay, I don't like this anymore, I'm just going to not do it anymore. Well, if you don't work, you don't eat. So, it's kind of tough. But there are plenty of things that we do by choice or that we do because we feel duty-bound and we can't say no. And those are the kinds of things where you do have to kind of step outside the little circle there and look in on it and be a little more honest with yourself about, do I have to do this? Is it enriching my life? Is it something that's necessary for someone else's happiness or well-being, and will I be causing someone else to suffer if I don't do it? Or is there someone else that can step in and fill this gap? And you have to really examine some things. It's so easy. From experience I can say it is really easy to overcommit and to say yes one too many times. And then you have to extricate yourself from those situations. And it's difficult, but once you do it, you find out there really is somebody else that can step in and fill that responsibility.
Sabbath rest, it's a really important part of simplifying our lives, but it's also important to not get religious about it and turn it into another chore. What tips would you give for having a truly restful Sabbath?
Well, you know, the nice thing about Sabbath is there aren't a lot of rules attached to it. Mm-hmm. The only real guideline that we have in the Bible is that you just don't do your regular work. So if you're a computer analyst or something like that, you'd want to use that Sabbath rest to get away from the computer. That would be the day you could, you know, let your eyes rest and your fingers rest and let your carpal tunnel heal and go, you know, get outside, do something different. Or even, you know, you don't have to get outside. You know, when I say get outside, my husband kind of freaks out because he's not real crazy about being outside, you know, especially in the Texas summers. So, you know, I say, well, then just go watch a movie. Chill out. Do what you enjoy doing. And that's really, you know, that's the simple way to approach Sabbath, is one day a week, just do something that you really enjoy doing. You know, rest, enjoy nature, enjoy your family. Don't get, you know, bogged down about not being busy with work. Find something that your whole family can do together, even if it's just for a couple of hours. The whole point of Sabbath rest is to spend a little bit of time doing something that you don't normally do and allowing yourself to get regenerated and to feel refreshed so that you can face another week.
Your husband, Chuck, wrote some chapters in your book about how anxiety can be a real enemy to simplicity. Mm-hmm. What are some hints for avoiding anxiety and living in spiritual simplicity?
Well, you know, he had a pretty stressful childhood, and a lot of that followed him into his adult life. But what I've watched him over the years, and we've been married almost 37 years now, but I've watched him change so much, and the key for him was recognizing really the goodness of God and being able to release things that kept him just all wound up and fearful. When we first got married, this was before cell phones again, if I went anywhere out of his sight, he worried the whole time I was gone. And this was because, as a child, his father, whenever he would leave, he never knew when or if he would come back. And so he had all these fears that he had to overcome. But over the years, I've seen him change, and it's simply been because he's chosen to believe that God is a good God and that he will take care of his needs. And one of his needs was to know that his loved ones would be safe.
Pam, thank you so much for your time this evening on Open House.
Well, I enjoyed it very much.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.